What caused AJ Foyt to say this?
There's no reason for that kind of crap. Chiba's a complete goddamn idiot on the crap he pulls and dive under somebody on track like this. And I agree that we might have come down a little bit, but he's been pulling this crap all year. Time somebody whips his shit.
Find out today on Inside Motorsport.
From the racetracks around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
Mark Webber had his third win of the season in the Formula 3000 race ahead of the French Formula 1 Grand Prix. I caught up with Mark, who was elated to take a win in front of his new employer's, Renault's, home crowd.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. To win today from the front row was good. We got a good start from second on the grid and managed to pass Enger into the first corner. And then after that, it was actually fairly straightforward. The balance of the car was very good for the whole race and managed to have, you know, on the last lap about 9.5 second lead. So it was a very good day, very hot. The track temperature was about 46 degrees, so it was a very hot day. And now I'm a point off a lead in the championship, which is also nice. Wilson finished second in the end. He got Enger on the second lap, second from last lap. Yeah, it's nice to do it, like you say, in front of my bosses.
The man who is leading the championship, who you're trying to run down, doesn't have any sort of advantage off the start.
Yeah, that was crucial. I mean, qualifying was, we're on the front row, and Wilson was second from the second row, just behind me, and fourth on the grid. So I could see after the first lap, even though I was leading, I could see the hairpin that there was two naughty cars, so I knew that he was third. But in the last three races, I've ripped 14 points out of him, so that's been very useful. So we will just hopefully continue it, and we've got a bit of a break now, in the calendar at least. I haven't got a break as much. I've got 4 days at Barcelona this week in the Benetton, and I'm at the Goodwood Festival of Speed on the Saturday, and I'm going to try and get up to the bikes on the Sunday, so it's pretty busy at the moment.
Talking about getting back into the Formula 1 car, they seem to have found some speed there at MagnaCore this weekend.
They would have liked to have found a bit more. I think they were a little bit disappointed with where they did qualify, and they were hoping to try and at least get one car in the top 12. To be honest, I'm not exactly sure where they ended up. I know they ended up about 16th or 17th, I think, something like that. Which was all right, but there's still a lot of work to do, and we're going to be working on some more things this week and trying to get the performance a bit better. But there's things which it's just simple, you know. There's just downforce and power, and it's simple as that. But those things, to try and find those things in Formula 1 these days without one, having reliability problems, and two, you know, with on the aerodynamic side, you just don't find those things overnight. So they're looking hard, and it's all three of us, Jensen, Giancarlo, and myself, are pushing hard to try and help them as much as we can, but it's not easy.
Are all three of you at the test sessions, or do you go out and you do the R&D, and then eventually they come out on race weekends and see what you have actually found works?
I do a lot of the tyre testing and traction control and launch control work, so the race drivers will be aware of what I have tested and what I think is what myself and engineers have thought is the best thing to use, and the most efficient and reliable, whatever it may be. But Jensen will be with me for 4 days next week. He'll be driving the new car, well, this year's car, and I'll be still driving the old car. But it's very good to use the old car for the testing because it's extremely reliable, and that's what you need when you're tyre testing. You don't need any snags. And when you have a snag in an F1 car, you can have, like, it could be an hour or 2 hours before you get out of the garage again, and that's half your morning gone. So the old car does normally run quite reliable, so that's why it's crucial to keep that car running and getting the most tyre work done as possible.
And how awkward is it, in a mindset, because you're jumping into the Formula 3000 car, no traction control, no none of the bells and whistles, but when you're testing, how, and you're testing something like launch and traction control, how awkward is it and how hard is it to get your mind adjusted to, all right, I hold my finger on this button here and just and my foot flat on the floor?
It is an issue, definitely. It's harder to go, come back to the 3000 compared to what it is to go to the Formula 1 car, because you are, even though I know, you know, all the instrumentation on the F1 car now very well, it still takes you a while to feel totally comfortable. But then back to the 3000, the car feels absolutely horrible. You know, it feels like I've got no grip and no, you know, no downforce, and yeah, everything feels awkward because that's basically how that car is. But we've got a calendar as such that I normally have a run in the 3000 car after I do run in the F1 car, so that's important because, like you say, the F1 car now is very complicated for the driver in ways of the amount of buttons and settings that are going on even during a lap, you know, what you're changing yourself in the cockpit on the steering wheel.
Did anyone come up with a definitive answer why so many cars, when they first came out with the traction control, was stalling on the grid?
Well, everyone's got their own problems, you know. It's all just a matter of codes and software, and you know, when you've got all these guys who are specialists at working at getting these cars off the line, there is certain things that will come into it that will cause the system to fail. And if it does fail, the car will normally go into sort of a security mode, but sometimes it doesn't happen, and it's just because of numbers and codes. And when everything's green, like the traction control, launch control was, and they're trying to perfect it as much as they can, and things like that can happen.
Well, Mark, a fascinating sport, and congratulations on your success today in the Formula 3000 race at Magny-Cours in France. And also, I hope when you get back to England, you don't cop too much crap from those Poms for beating us in the rugby.
I will. I'll get absolutely plenty. I already have had plenty of phone calls, so tell them that they've got to put four countries in one to beat us. But we'll get them in the second test, hopefully. But it's been a good day in France, and yeah.
Thanks a lot for your time, and of course your good sponsors, Foster's, Yellow Pages and all them, once again helping you out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Kickstart your sporting Sunday morning with Jeff Adams and Craig Gravel on the Good Sports. Cram your morning from 6 to 9, starting with the latest news from the BBC Sports Newsroom, followed by an onslaught of local and national sport. Start your week with all the sporting news on Canberra's only sport and racing station, SSFM.
Did my team win over the weekend?
What didn't the ref step in?
Who'll be in this week's lineup?
Sports crazy and confused? It's Wolfie here. Join me every weekday morning from 7 and I'll keep you in the know with all the local, national and international sports news. I'll take you beyond the scoreboard results and introduce you to some homegrown talent, explain the finer art of lesser-known sports and keep you in touch with your community sports. So tune in to Canberra's only morning sports program on SSFM.
What are you doing on a Wednesday night at 11 o'clock?
Sleeping. Usually studying.
Sleeping. Watching TV.
I'm glad to be in bed. Normally sleeping.
Listening to Stan Zemanek.
Well, wake up and join us in the bowels of the SSS studios to hear all the filth, dirt and crap that all the other media outlets are too scared to bring you. Tune in to the Wednesday wash-up at 11 p.m. for a bit of relief on the Good Sports SSFM.
In Formula One, the Grand Prix of France, of course, is underway later on this evening. Ralf Schumacher has turned the tables on his brother Michael to take pole position on this, his 26th birthday. At the driver debriefing, it was firstly congratulations on both a birthday and pole position.
Well, it was very tight indeed. In actual fact, I didn't expect that we were able after this morning to beat them here, but it worked out. Very tight, but it was enough.
This is also not just pole position, but your very first pole position. That must be very special for you and also for the team.
It is special for the team, maybe. For me, it is nice to be on pole position, but then the Saturday doesn't count. So I'd rather, you know, hope that we have a good day tomorrow and that I watch the white lines a bit better this time.
I'm sure you will. Michael, 0.01 of a second, it's not very much time. Do you think you had a little more time in your car, maybe 0.012?
I think both of us feel that way probably, or all three of us. If you count together, you may say you could have gone faster, but it doesn't count. What is the result finally, and him having pole position, that's count, and it's a good way to celebrate his birthday anyway.
Absolutely. It looked quite crowded out there on the track towards the end. Did you have any problems with traffic? Because certainly there were lots of cars out there.
I wasn't out on the end. I was just 10 minutes to go. I went out and there was actually no real traffic. There was two cars going out of the way easily. I just had traffic in my third run, which I would say could have been the fastest run. But, well, that's the way it goes.
Michael, thank you. David Coulthard, you were fourth when you set out for your fourth and final run, and you came home third. Could you talk us through that lap?
Well, the third run had been actually on schedule to be quicker than that, but there was a little bit of gravel on the track in turn 13 from one of the other cars, so I had to brake quite early for that corner, and I lost the time, so I only went, I think, half a tenth quicker. So I knew it was possible to be quicker on the flat, but unfortunately I didn't seem to get turn three quite as good in that last run as I had the previous, so I was actually slower into turn two, turn four, sorry, forgotten how to count. And then after that, I just tried to stay tidy and bring together the lap. But I think that we can take encouragement because genuinely the car was capable of being quicker. But you have to make a decision when you're doing the lap as to whether you're trying to gain that little bit of time which will help you in the grid, or you know, obviously you can go over the top and lose the time.
Now we have Williams on pole, Ferrari second, McLaren third. It's very close, but do you have any confidence that in the race that you can reverse this order?
As we've seen this year, the race is a completely different issue. You know, qualifying, we haven't shown to be particularly strong other than a couple of circuits. And, you know, the races, we have been a bit stronger. And, you know, obviously it's always a bit difficult to know exactly where we stand because the Williams being on a different tyre, you know, we can kind of know roughly where we're going to compare with the Ferrari. But we just don't know what to expect from them. So we do our race and, yes, we can gain places.
Thank you, David. Finally, back to you, Ralph. Today is your birthday. Tomorrow you're not the birthday boy. Will Michael be giving you any favours at the start tomorrow? It was very tight at the Nürburgring. You are on pole this time, though.
Well, I own him one, definitely. this time will be hopefully the other way around. I think we're going to have a tight race again. As David said, we have to see what the tyres are doing. From what we've seen so far from Bridgestone this weekend, they looked to perform very good, very well. So we'll have to see whether we are able to keep...
And this weekend, motor racing in touring cars in Britain moves to Donington Park for the latest round of the British Touring Car Championship. And it is the egg-backed Astra driver, James Thompson, who starts both Donington Park races a day from the front of the grid. Thompson has set a pair of 1 minute 42.6 second laps in his Egg Sport Vauxhall Astra Coupe, a clear 2/10 quicker than anyone else could manage during the two qualifying sessions. Thompson has focused recently on getting the setup on his Astra, initially developed by works drivers Evan Muller and Jason Plato, more to his liking in terms of its handling. And particularly given the unofficial testing ban this year, it's made things difficult for him. Vauxhall team driver Evan Muller took second in the sprint race grid and third for the feature, while his teammate Jason Plato is second in the feature and only fourth in the sprint. Muller has suffered badly from brake problems on a circuit which traditionally places a high demand on stopping power, not helped by his left foot braking habit. The second egg Astra of Phil Bennett sneaked ahead of Plato into third in sprint race times, but only just edged out the improving Peugeot of Steve Soper in the feature. Bike star and BTCC debutant Aaron Slight lost the majority of his times after failing to stop his Peugeot at the Weybridge, and subsequently only managed to get one flying lap in before the end of the session. Kurt Luby in the Lexus was slowed by engine problems, and Tim Harvey also had engine problems which put his Alpha out with only two laps. Better news for Alpha in the production session was provided by Gavin Piper, who rewarded the GA Jamspeed crew with a super-fast engine change on his 156 after free practice by setting the time pole by 0.6 second. So the grid they're looking for, the sprint race, sees James Thompson in his Export Vauxhall Astra on top of the grid, from Ivan Muller, then Phil Bennett and Jason Plato all in Vauxhall Astra coupes, then Dan Ease, Steve Soper, Aaron Slight in Peugeot 406s, Kurt Luby in Lexus, Tim Harvey in Alfa Romeo and John Dooley in Alfa Romeo. In the feature race, it's Thompson, Plato, Muller, Bennett, Soper, Ease, Slight, Luby, then Harvey. If we move over to the European Touring Car Championship, they're off racing over at the Hungaroring for the last round of the FIA European Touring Car Championship. And there it's Alfa Romeo's Fabrizio Giovinazzi, who won a fantastically close battle with Honda's Gabriele Tarquini for pole position. Giovinazzi set the early pace in his Nord Auto run Alfa 156 with a 1 minute 43.191 second run, which Tarquini immediately toppled with a 1 minute 42.942 second effort. On his second set of tyres, Gabrielli set a 1 minute 42.589, which Fabrizio pipped with a 1 minute 42.569, just 200ths of a second quicker. The second Auto Alpha of Nicola Rini will start the first of Sunday's two races from third on the grid, and he then has Roberto Colaccio in the Audi A4 Quattro, fourth quickest ahead of Matt Neal's Team Dynamics Nissan Primera, which had suffered from a misfire all weekend. And then there's Tarquini's teammate Fabrice Walfish. The grid for the second of Sunday's 250km races will be decided by reversing results of the opening event. In the super production class, it's Gianni Morbidelli in the BMW 320i who's heading series leader Duncan Huysman, while Norway's Tommy Rustad has taken third in the production class in his Nissan Primera.
Of course, James Courtney took two podium finishes last weekend at the Power Tour round where the British Formula 3 were part of the program. And we look now towards the next visit to, to Europe, which will see the Formula 3000's Mark Webber heading back to Silverstone, a race which he has won in the past.
And as well as the European touring cars being over at the Hungaroring, they've also got the FIA GT class there as well. And it's a Dutchman there, Mike Hazemans, in a Car Sport Holland Chrysler Viper, who's set the Super Pole qualifying fastest time ahead of Tom Coronel and Alistair Storm. Christophe Bouchot in another of the Chrysler Vipers, Julian Bailey in the second Alistair Storms, and Ricard Rydell, his driver having his first outing in the ProDrive All-Stars Ferrari 550 Maranello. That was the car at the previous round, was put out with some irregularities in its gearbox design. It's up and running quite well. And Sebastian Blikmolen rounds out the top six for qualifying in another of the Chrysler Vipers. In the GT class, it's David Terry in a JMB competition car there. A Porsche, as usual, the Porsche's out there doing actually Ferrari 360 Modena ahead of the Porsches. So things looking good there for the FIA GT series at Hungaroring. And the FIA sports cars are running at Brno, and Jan Lammers is the fastest person there after the first practice session, following on with his qualifying form, and he's sitting with his racing for Holland Dome Jod ahead of the Ferrari Jod of Lavaggi and Van, and then there's the BMS Scuderia Italia Ferrari sitting in third. So the FIA GT this weekend as well on Brno. We'll have the results of them next weekend.
David Russell joins us on the line now, getting set for next week's event for Procar at Lakeside Raceway. And of course, David, it is going to be another interesting go around. You had a pretty good run out there at Phillip Island on the, well, with the V8 supporting the Pro Car event, and well, it looks like you're going to be set for another great weekend.
Oh yeah mate, we're sort of looking forward to the Lakeside round. I've had a lot of sort of experience up there because basically I was more Queensland based with the Willowbank and the Lakeside track, so I'll have a bit of an advantage going into that track with a fresh car. We gave it a quick test the other day at Eastern Creek, and everything seems to be pretty well down pat. I'm pretty happy with the way it's going at the moment.
Now you're putting the finishing touches on the car. Can you tell us a bit about its specifications and what actually drew you to picking this car for the job?
Oh, basically the GDI, very superior in the handling and braking, and also with a standard 103 kilowatt engine, you're not lacking in too much in the go department either. So yeah, they're pretty much a very superior vehicle over some of the others in its class.
Mm. Are you looking forward to having a number of runs in the next couple of weeks rather than the big long break that you have had to suffer so far this season?
Oh, for sure. Like it's very good sort of keeping your hand in rather than having an event sort of with a very long gap in between. The only disadvantage with that is if you have to do any repairs on the car or anything like that, you've got a limited time.
You're running in GT Performance Class E.
Yeah.
The competition in that class has been quite tough this year, with a lot of newcomers coming into the class, and of course the Satrian
has got now three runners in that chassis and configuration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course, there's a lot of different makes in Class E. You sort of find with sort of anything from the Holden Astras to the Holden Vectras, and with Daihatsu with their Syrian GDI as well, so it's pretty fierce.
Who's going to be the fellas that you're going to be watching the most for? Because obviously a lot of these runners haven't been to Lakeside for quite a few years.
Oh, basically Luke Yaldon, he's always good. He showed a lot of good form in the last couple of rounds. Nigel Williams, my teammate, basically he's always on the pace as well, and a lot of the Vectras as well, with Martin Doxey.
With the Nations Cup and the A and B categories, they've been having a lot of talk about parity. Do you find that the D and E cars are a lot more similarly matched?
Well, you do find with the GDI's 1800cc engine versus like an Astra or a Vectra with the 2.2, you see a small difference in sort of top end speed, but where they sort of gain a bit more in the top end, they sort of lose it in bottom end speed. So pretty much parity seems to be pretty good at the moment, but sort of they do at Bathurst control a bit with weight as well.
Mm. Now Lakeside is going to be pretty much a handling track. How much setting up does it take once you get to the track to be able to get the car quick around the circuit?
Well, Lakeside is very much sort of it's got a lot of right hand corners, so you've got to allow for that when you're setting up the car. It's a very flowing track with a reasonable size straight with a kink at the end. So basically, it's going to take a few sessions to get the car sort of up on the pace. But sort of if you've got the know-how, as I said, you can sort of you might be able to come up with a bit of an edge over everyone else.
What drew you to Pro Car? And
oh well, basically the coverage you get. Basically Pro Car sort of offer sort of good chance for to get your sponsor's name sort of out there, and that's what basically what your sponsors are looking for, you know, to get a fair bit of coverage, and basically that's the best thing they offer.
Mm. And of course you don't do motor racing without some good support, and I know that you have got a few good local sponsors there that you really have to give thanks to.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Well, we've got a lot of bronze sponsors on board, Dakin Clutches and High Tech Mufflers, Admark Marketing, and basically with a Caltex Heveline sponsorship as well. That sort of really helps out.
And I know everyone's always looking for those silver and gold packages to be whipped up pretty quick.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, you sort of you need a lot of things, and also you need a lot of spares as well, so it always helps with a spare clutch or if you need exhaust modifications, they're always there to help, so yeah, it's great.
Well, we wish you all the best, Dave, and perhaps we'll be speaking to you on the Victory Dais next week here on Inside Motorsport.
Oh, okay, thank you very much.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio. Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Kickstart your morning Sunday morning with Jeff Adams and Craig Gravel on the Good Sports. Cream your morning from 6 to 9, starting with the latest news from the BBC Sports Newsroom, followed by an onslaught of local and national sports. Start your week with all the sporting news on Canberra's only sport and racing station, SSFM.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Richo Guzman has captured his first pole position since 1997 for Marconi's Grand Prix of Cleveland, which is presented by First Star.
That's the fourth I have, and very good to be up front, especially turn one. You either want to be on pole and be last on the grid, so I got one good spot. So I've always been very competitive here in qualifying. I had some mechanical problems because this is a tough race for the car, but we have a great motor with us, which is very reliable, so I'm looking for a great race tomorrow. I'm sure it's going to be tough. There is a lot of different lines in this place, good passing, different groups, so we're going to be fine.
Guzman has collected a championship point for Saturday's performance, giving him his eighth of the season. And an unusual occurrence, Guzman's pole-winning effort came out of the first half-hour qualifying group, the one with the fewest championship points.
Well, that happens, you know. Two groups, you have to play by the rules, and today we're lucky, but our lap time was pretty decent. Normally this track improves every time you go out, but a little bit of rain has helped us, but most of the time you're in a desert running on that first group, so I think it was a lucky day for us.
The second group, that consists of the drivers with the most championship points, were plagued by scattered showers that soaked the track just before the green flag, and actually brought out a red flag condition midway through the half-hour session. The track remained damp when the 35-minute delay was over, and that resulted in none of the second group qualifiers able to threaten Guzman's time. Dario Franchitti in the Team Cool Green car was the fastest driver of the second group with a lap of 126.776 miles per hour, and that places him 14th position overall. Helio Castroneves, he is coming out of 23rd position. His qualifying time, 118.176 miles per hour, will see him having a real run through the field.
Like I always say, sometimes you're the windscreen, sometimes you're the bug, and today we were the bug, you know. But, hey, tomorrow let's see what's going to happen. I don't know the weather, if it's going to rain or dry. Probably it's going to be the same way, so we just have to be patient, climb our steps with patience, and see where we're going to end up tomorrow. Definitely going to be really excited. I'm sure the guys in front are not going to let us pass, and we're going to try as much as we can to go to the front, so... you guys better watch the show. There's no doubt about it. It's a big stuff for us. A good part of it is because we have a lot of guys on the point, on the lead, with us. So play smart and see what's going to happen.
The defending champion of the Cleveland Grand Prix is Roberto Moreno of Patrick Racing. He's qualified 25th in a 26-car field. So what does Big Mo think about the hard charges that'll be heading towards him?
That's fine. Let them come.
And of course you can catch that race on Channel 10 on Monday night.
Daryl Coon joins us on the program now. The XR6 that has been a giant killer. We saw you at Wakefield Park keeping the XR8 of John McAvoy well in tow. And as you go to Lakeside once again this weekend coming, you will be hoping to be able to produce the same sort of result in the XR6.
Well, it would be great if we could. I mean, obviously, the results like we got at Wakefield Park don't come easy. It's not very often that a six-wheeler can even keep up with a V8, let alone beat it. Lakeside's a tight track. I've never been there before, so I guess anything could happen.
Well, you didn't lose too much on the V8 in the Phillip Island round, where it was an interesting run down there.
Well, I guess at Phillip Island, there was probably only one car that had the wood on me. From the latest entry list that I've seen, lucky for me, that car's not going to be there. So maybe, just maybe, we might be able to share the limelight again for outright honours.
What drew you to driving in production car racing and to the XR6?
Okay, well, my background was with NASCAR, and we decided that we wanted to get more into V8 supercar racing, or circuit racing as such, because NASCAR had a fairly limited market. At the time, they were just racing the oval down in Melbourne. So we wanted to get exposure to more tracks and the like, and that's what we liked about the production car. It was being a good support event, and the numbers were growing, so obviously it had the interest. And we looked at different models of cars to race, and we ultimately decided on the Ford. I'm based in Melbourne. We've got a few ties with the different people within the Ford Motor Company, and I guess a bit of passion for Fords, which is probably the most important thing. And we decided on the XR6.
It is a interesting car, and when we saw it here at Wakefield Park at the beginning of the season, it certainly wasn't afraid of getting a bit taily and a bit out of shape. Are they a hard car to control?
I guess ultimately it all comes down to how you set them up. That's the way I like to have my car handling. You get a little bit loose is fast, and as long as it's not too taily. And in a longer race, we can have a lot of success with it. We had success last year by winning the Australian Championship, and we also won Bathurst. So I don't think there's any problems with the car setup. It's just something to, just the way I like to drive them.
How long does it take you to learn a circuit? Because already this year you've had to learn one other circuit, Wakefield Park. Do you think that you might be at a disadvantage going to Lakeside where you've not ever run before?
Well, it's strangely enough that the first three races of this season are circuits that I've never raced at before. I've never raced at Phillip Island previous to the race meeting that we had there. I probably think that it takes about two sessions to to learn a track, to work out where it goes with some confidence, but most tracks probably require, you know, at least one full race meeting there to really get to know it, to start to find its limits. A track like Phillip Island is fairly simple in that it's just got a few sweeping corners, but I think that your really good times don't come unless you're really committed, and you can only do that by doing miles at the track.
With a number of different classes in your category of the GT performance, the GT production series, do you find you have much trouble with the lap traffic when you start to get into the smaller cars?
We've found it quite all right so far. At Phillip Island, we caught up with a couple of cars. Most of the time, they're pretty good in keeping a bit of an eye out for us. I haven't had to give any a bit of a hurry up yet, which is good. So more that we can avoid that, the better.
Yeah, obviously, because that's when it starts to get expensive, when you start to bring rubbing into it.
Well, it's not so much that. It's also what the stewards happen to say at the end of the race meeting.
Yeah, that's true too.
That's where the real cost comes. that's the cost that you can't really bargain for. But the racing in production car racing is pretty clean, which is really good. It's a testament to the other drivers in the sport as well.
Coming from a speedway background and already thinking that road races are a toppy-nosed lot, it is interesting to go to a production car paddock where everyone is fairly down-to-earth. It's a fairly speedway-type paddock where everyone's very friendly and no one is too elitist in it.
Well, I guess that's probably true. You know, we're always trying to put on as better show as we possibly can. All the fans are welcome to come round to our to our tent and, you know, have a look at our Peter Warren Ford XR6. And the more people that do come round and the more interest that they show, the better it is for the sport.
Of course, you're going to the Paperclip after Lakeside, which will be another interesting race for you.
Yeah, that's a very high-speed track. We went there last year and we were lucky enough to taste success. There's quite a lot of changes that we'll need to do to the car between Lakeside and Ipswich. And the car's going to be staying in Queensland between the two races because logistically it's a bit of a nightmare. Hopefully we'll have a clean run at Lakeside so that we can go to Ipswich and just make the necessary changes rather than doing some unnecessary panel beating and things.
Yeah, it is always a problem, but I would imagine that you would enjoy the fact that the two races are very close together rather than having the big gaps that you've had to endure so far this season.
Well, that's right. I guess in a perfect world, it would have been nice to have a 1 week apart. I might have been able to have a holiday up in the lovely state of Queensland. But due to work commitments, I have to come back down to Melbourne and then come up again, which is, adds a little bit to the cost. But it's still going to be great to be there, and I'm sure the fans will show their appreciation.
With the budgets that you run for the GT performance cars, do you find that with the ever-expanding series, it's becoming harder and harder to keep up the front?
I guess budgets are always a problem, and I guess you can really never have enough. Luckily for us, this year we're not racing to Perth. That was a bit of a backbreaker last year trying to get to there. With also having races that are close together, like the organising of the season, having the two Queensland races together also helps a lot logistically. But certainly we're hopeful of attracting more support so that we can remain successful within the series.
I know a lot of people are looking forward to tonight on Fox, where the first of the Pro Car programs are going to be available for people with pay television.
Well, that's certainly going to be exciting. From what we've seen so far, the racing has been fantastic, and I think it's only a matter of time before it also goes onto a commercial network.
Well, we're all looking forward to next weekend's racing, and Daryl Kern, good luck with your attempts to go back-to-back with the six-cylinder championship, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to chat to you next weekend after the Lakeside round.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that, and I look forward to seeing as many fans, Ford fans, out at the Lakeside track as we possibly can, and hopefully they'll show their appreciation.
Last weekend, the European Grand Prix wrapped up with some controversy. Now, we will see if Ralf Schumacher will cut across Michael's bow as abruptly as what his brother did to him 1 week ago. The European Grand Prix was dominated by Michael Schumacher, and here is the driver debriefing from that event.
We have had a superb weekend. We got pole position, we got the win. We had a nice race again together, Ralf and myself, until the stop and go. So it was quite an entertaining weekend, and tough weekend as well, because then in the end Jean Pablo was coming and pushing, and so in this respect we're very delighted to have finished where we are.
But in a way, the race almost never started for you. You went out in the T car, the warm-up lap, and stopped at the far end of the circuit. What happened?
We had a problem in the warm-up. Precaution-wise, we changed some parts, and we just wanted to do an installation lap. And during that installation lap, we failed something, which I don't know what it was. And I had to stop, and it was obviously at the at the worst point, because it was very far away from the pits. So I was wondering how to get back. I didn't see a scooter, just a scooter without a key. So I was lucky, suddenly a man appeared and gave me the key, so I got going. Obviously, at this moment I thought I should have time enough, but you never know. I mean, you have not the time to watch on your watch, and so it's a strange feeling stopping down there and seeing your chances slipping away.
It was a much tougher battle with Ralph this week than in Canada a couple of weeks ago. A couple of times you got very close, you closed the door when you went wide at the hairpin. Do you feel you can race more tough with Ralph because he's your brother?
No, it's not more tough. No, we drive very close to the edge, what you have to do. I mean, I would do this to anyone, honestly. I can't, and he doesn't give presents to me, neither I can, because we both work for different teams. If you look back to past races, we made it very difficult to each other. But that's the way it is, but we always leave room to survive for the other one. And so I always look forward to Sunday week to fight against my brother, because then, to be honest, it doesn't matter who wins in the end to me to some degree. But it was obviously a hard decision for Ralph to get the stop and go penalty for, as I heard, just half a car passing the white line. It's quite a strong decision, which destroyed his race. Honestly, we struggled with the first set of tyres. We were a bit slow, but then when we got the second set of tyres, things were sorted. We changed the balance of the car, and I was much, much faster. So I think under normal circumstances, we should have been able to do it, but it would have been a very close battle.
Hey, Michael. Juan Pablo, your second place and fastest lap of the race. Did this silence the critics have been talking about you recently?
Well, you know, it doesn't really matter to me, the critics, but to be honest, I think we've been trying really hard with the team. They got very competitive. Yesterday was, you know, was good in qualifying. I got a third. And today, you know, things starting to turn my way, and I had pretty good luck. The first few laps of the race, I took it really steady, you know. I knew Ralph and Michael were going to go, and I said, just, you know, do a couple of laps, get into it, and just build up the pace slowly, and the car was really quick.
It was nice, but also before the second stop, you went a lot quicker. Why was that?
Just pushing, you know. There was a room in the car to go quick. The car was very positive, so it was very, very easy to make mistakes. But, you know, I got it to handle with the car to, you know, drive it really smooth and start making up the time. It was amazing.
Thanks, Juan Pablo. David, third place today, was that really the best you could hope for?
Yeah, I think so. I think, obviously, under normal race pace circumstances, and would have been fourth had Ralph not got his penalty. So to gain an extra place through that, obviously, is fortunate for me.
Do you feel the one stop was the right way to go? Is everyone faster he was on two?
From where I was in the grid, I think it was the right thing to do. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing when you can look back in a race and say, oh, well, I didn't get traffic, or this happened. But, you know, we have to make our decisions based on experience from before, and from that good position, it was the right thing.
Yeah, and that was the driver's debriefing from the European Grand Prix last weekend. Joining us now from New Zealand is the man who everybody's trying to catch up to in the Australian Rally Championship, and he's just getting himself ready to come over for the next round of that championship over in Adelaide, and that's Possum Bourne. Possum, no doubt getting things organised over there, ready to head back over for the next round.
That's right, yeah. I'll be leaving for Adelaide tomorrow. The guys have just left Melbourne with the trucks, and that drive through tonight, and have all the gear there tomorrow, and we'll get ourselves set up and do a day's testing with the car, and we should be ready to go by the weekend, we hope.
Now, this is the first time that the Australian Rally Championship has been down in South Australia for a number of years, so for everybody, it's back to a learning situation.
Yeah, it's like breaking in new ground again. I think the last time we were there was 93, and we have really fond memories of the event in South Australia, so we're actually quite looking forward to coming back. It's always been good to us, and we hope it stays the same.
Now, of course, the situation is that it's going to be a bit of a mix of forestry roads and council roads around the place, so no doubt
the first day when you get there, it's going to be really seeing what the road conditions are like and what choice of tyres and the like.
That's right, you know, and what weather's expected and what the terrain's like. Is it really fast or is it tight stuff? Is it loose? Is it hard? You know, everything, just to get our head around what we've got there, and we can, as you say, make proper tyre choices and proper suspension setups too. You know, if it's dead smooth, you can run it a bit softer. It's a bit rougher, you have to be tightening it up a bit so it doesn't get knocked around.
Mm. Now, for yourself, you've been showing a fair degree of success this year, particularly coming off the results of a win at the last round, the Rally of Queensland. A number of people saying, what's going to take to stop you?
I hope they don't find that out. Honestly, we're having a fantastic run and we're enjoying every moment of it. You know, it takes a long time in motorsport to get a good package together, get a good team together, get everything together, and you really do enjoy reaping the rewards of all their hard work for many, many, many years when it comes along, and long may it continue as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. Now, of course, there's a bit of talk around the place that there could be a few other manufacturers and cars coming into the championship, particularly World Rally cars, about the same specification of the car that you're running. You said as being something that's going to really just help boost the championship up to that next level?
Yes. I look forward to that opportunity to race any other manufacturer that comes along, you know. It can only be good for the sport, and at the end of the day, that's why we're all there. We all have a great passion for the sport, and we want to see it get stronger and stronger and stronger. And if the other manufacturers front up, I just thank them very much for that, because we need them, we want them there, and we want to make it as strong as possible, because I think the sport of rallying is just fantastic. It's spectacular, and it seems like Channel 10 and everybody else have embraced it, and it's growing for us.
Now, as a lot of the rally events have been showing, particularly, for example, like the FIA Rally of Canberra, you've got the super specials, and there's one going to be down in the Adelaide Rally as well. What do you think about the introduction of the super specials into the rallying scene?
I think it was one of the best things they've done. It's sort of akin to one-day cricket from test matches. You know, what it does is it brings offstage with two cars generally side by side, but sometimes only one, to the city where it's easy for everyone to get to. You just wander down, have a look, and if you enjoy what you've seen, then you can get in your car and head out and watch some real action in the forest as well, or out on the public roads. And I think it's a really good thing for people just to get a bit of a feel of what it's like live. You know, you've seen it on TV, now here it is, nice and close. Come and have a look and see what you think of it.
That's right. Everybody should at least enjoy the dust in the hair and the teeth in the camera lens at the same time.
Yeah, you haven't enjoyed rallying until you've sat there and spat out the dust and done all of those things, because that's all part of it. It definitely has its own personality and its own action, I suppose you could say.
Mm. Well, Possum, we look forward to seeing you back over here in Australia for the next round of the Australian Rally Championship, and we'll see how that blue army of Subaru keeps on going for the next round.
Well, I hope it goes well again, but we're really looking forward to coming to South Australia and really enjoying the challenge. I hope we can do a good job again.
Thank you very much, Possum Bourne.
Next weekend, the Australian Rally Championship moves down to South Australia, to Adelaide, for the Coopers Rally of South Australia. And joining us now is Neil Bates. Neil, obviously the first time the rally has been down to South Australia for a while, and a bit of a new challenge for me, the drivers in the championship.
I'm looking forward to it, actually. It'll be good to do a new event where everyone's on equal footing with having to write a new set of notes and so forth, so it'll be good, and as I say, I'm looking forward to it.
In terms of the conditions down in South Australia, have you been told what they are likely to be like?
Well, they're saying it's tight and twisty, but I've been to South Australia a lot of times before, and I'm not sure if they know what tight and twisty is, so I'm expecting very fast flowing roads. I think their perception of fast and everyone else is a bit different.
And any idea in terms of like the surface, whether it's going to be gravelly or...?
I think there'll be a mixture. There'll be some gravelly shire roads, and there'll also be some forestry roads, which I'd expect to be quite damp and have pine cones and probably be fairly slippery. So I think there'll be quite a big mix of different surfaces, and you know, that's just going off memory. I think the last time I competed there was 95.
So, as you say, a bit of a levelling experience for everybody who's involved in the championship this time around.
Yeah, for sure, you know, and the South Australian government's behind the event, so I'm expecting it to be a well-organised and event, and I think they're going to a lot of trouble with some of the stuff they're doing with the event, so I expect it to be a very good event, and I hope that, you know, I just hope the roads are good, and I'm sure it'll be enjoyable for everyone.
Mm. Now, since your last outing, any sort of major work on the Corolla at all to hopefully try and peg back that flying possum?
No, you know, realistically, there's nothing else we can do. We're trying our best to get as much speed on, but we've, you know, got nothing more significant that we can find to make the car quicker. And, you know, his car is a 3 years later model, and it's just got a bit better technology. But, you know, in this sport, anything can happen. If we just keep the pressure on, I'm sure we can still... it's still possible to win the championship.
Mm. Well, Neil, no doubt we'll be keeping a close eye on how things go over there, and we'll probably give you a yell to see how things go in the forests and roads of South Australia.
No problems at all.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
The Indy Racing League was at Richmond earlier this morning for their first visit to a less than 1 mile oval.
Well, just in case you missed it at the top of the show, this is what AJ Foyt had to say about Eddie Cheever's move.
There's no reason for that kind of crap. Cheever's a complete goddamn idiot on the crap he pulls and dive under somebody on track like this. And I agree that we might have come down a little bit, but he's been pulling this crap all year. It's time somebody whips his shit out.
The racing was fast and furious, and it had its shares of bumps and bashes at the front of the field. Here are the highlights, brought to you by the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network.
Cheever's just going to be all over Salazar. Salazar knows it too, and here's Buddy Lazier hanging all over him. Let's watch this.
Jerry Baker, let's keep an eye on this restart. They're coming your way off of two.
Here comes the purple and white and yellow machine with the green helmet of Eliseo Salazar. Then the silver and black of Eddie Cheever. Then the purple, white, and yellow of Buddy Lazier. They've got the goal line. They're into turn three, and here comes Eliseo, and here comes Eddie Cheever.
Eddie Cheever's going to try to go to the outside of Salazar, then we'll tuck it back behind him as they cross the start finish line. 213 laps complete. Here's your race for the lead in the three-car battle. Here comes Lazier Bank.
Buddy Lazier moved it to the outside. He's about a car length behind Eddie Cheever.
No! Why did he do that?
Oh, my. Eddie Cheever trying to go underneath Salazar, and now we have both cars in the wall. Eddie Cheever and JP, you called it. You said no the second you saw him.
Yeah,
hit the nose underneath Salazar.
He'd been trying to do that to a couple other guys. Dive under at the last minute.
Oh, my goodness.
The car in front of him does not see him. He had the track, and Eddie just poked it in there where it didn't belong.
But clearly, Eliseo Salazar had an... I mean, he's second in points and had an opportunity to win this race.
And
no fault of his own, I don't think.
He's out of this race. After impact, his front end of his car came off. He got hit so hard.
How did Lazier avoid this? How did Buddy Lazier get underneath?
A lot of brakes and a lot of luck. And I tell you right now, somebody better get down and restrain Mr. A.J. Foyt and put some shackles on so he doesn't get down to see Mr. Cheever.
Eddie was nearly on the apron trying to make that pass. That was a bold move, but an ill-advised move, I have a feeling, at this point in the race.
Salazar for the lead. He had older tires than I did. He came very high out of two. I got a run on him going into three. He came down, and there was no place for me to go. It's very unfortunate.
Hail Colorado's Buddy Lazier has won again as he continues his now what appears to be momentum-building run in the Indy Racing Northern Lights Series. So here's the way they finished the scoring report brought to you by Pennzoil, the official motor oil of the Indy Racing Northern Lights Series. Buddy Lazier, the winners.
Well, you know, I'd gotten a run on them. I'd gotten a run on them all. And Eddie went low, and I saw it coming, you know. And I hate to have to pass him that way, but I knew it was going to be a battle there at the end. I missed my pit when I came in the pit, and I knew it was going to be a battle, but I didn't know I was going to be able to get around both of them like that. So, you know, my hat's off to everybody out there. They're real clean. It was a real clean race and a very difficult race physically. I am wore out. We did everything we could do. I don't know what to tell you. We just gave it everything we had every lap. And
Sam Hornish Jr. was second.
Yeah, we had something go bad in the motor. We're not sure if it's the motor. We had an exhaust had a break, but took away quite a bit of our power. Wish it was there, we would have been able to probably give Buddy a run for his money there at the end. Live and learn and go to the next race next weekend and you know, try to do a little bit better there.
Ballinger Jr. was third.
It was a great show for the single-seat open-wheel car here. We know we can run them. We know we can run them competitive, and we can run them safe. You know, it always gets a little crowded out there when you're on these little ovals, and, you know, it was par. You know, I think we had a great time, and I definitely look forward to coming back. No, I'm just super proud of the Gallus Racing Team. I mean, we came 3-4 is the best team effort of anybody here. And so, you know, we're getting there. We're on our way. We keep getting a little bit better every weekend. And you know, what can I say? We gave them a run for their money.
Didier Andre was fourth.
Yeah, Ben finished, you know, the team of third. We finished third and fourth. I mean, that's where we're back. And it was just great. Had a beautiful race. You know, the PD did a great job during the pit stop, and I was working on the track. I just had a tiny problem at the end with my engine, but nothing major, you know. And I knew that Al was a little bit faster than me, and I hope he was catching the other guys, but he finished first. It's a very good reason for all the Gallus team. I'm very happy.
Scott Sharp finished fifth. Mark Dismore was sixth. Donnie Beechler was seventh. Jeff Ward was eighth. Robbie Buell was ninth, and Buzz Calkins was tenth. Felipe Giafone finished 11th. Eliseo Salazar was 12th. We're being told he will be transported to a local hospital for observation. Eddie Cheever was 13th. Shige Hattori, 14th. Ayrton Dari, 15th. Jared Schrader, 16th. Sarah Fisher, 17th. Billy Boat, 18th. Jacques Lazier, our pole sitter, 19th. Billy Rowe, 20th. And Greg Gray, who did not start, gets credit for 21st place. Sam Hornish Jr. will go to Kansas next week with a 50-point lead over Buddy Lazier, who vaults into second place in the points, 269 to 219.
Yeah, that team on Chase and Pennzoil, Panther team with Sam Hornish, they're running really strong, too, so but at least we're gaining on them.
Scott Sharp with 201 points is third, and Eliseo Salazar falls to fourth. Fifth place belongs to Robbie Buell as we head to Kansas City.
We can definitely guess that Eddie Cheever is definitely on AJ Foyt's Christmas card list this year. But moving from the oval circle to the dirt circuit, and there's some changes in plan for the World Rally Championship, and it involves fixed driver lineups and a maximum entry size to be introduced for the 2002 World Rally Championship following a meeting last Wednesday of the sports decision-making body, the FIA World Motorsport Council. The regulation changes have come as a result of recommendations from the Rallies Commission, which is a think tank composed of representatives of the manufacturers, sponsors, event organisers, as well as WRC TV boss David Richards. Each manufacturer involved in the World Rally Championship will now be obliged to enter all events on the calendar with a minimum of 2 cars and a maximum of 3. But 2 of the entries must remain fixed through the whole season, except under exceptional circumstances. The move is an attempt to increase user-friendliness of the series to a growing TV fan base, and will also reduce the impact of specialists on events such as the Swedish Rally or the WRC's trio of asphalt rallies, and lessen the chances of lower-profile drivers being the established stars. Rally insiders cite the case of Harry Rowe van Appera, who is only running a limited program with Peugeot this year, causing confusion for the casual observer when he won the Swedish Rally. If a manufacturer enters 3 cars, the 2 best placed will be eligible to score makes championship points, a change from the existing rule which says that the manufacturer must nominate its 2 potential point scorers in advance. Several manufacturers intend to run 3 cars as the norm in 2002 and are likely to use the 3rd car to give young guns WC experience as well as a means to field asphalt or snow and ice experts. Permit numbers will be allocated to the 3rd entry. The maximum number of entries will be capped at 90 cars for every event, and this number is further broken down into 30 World Rally cars and 60 other entries for the events where they don't have the Super 1600 series, and to 30 WRC cars, 30 Super 1600 machines, and 30 other entries for the remaining rounds. Capping entries will streamline the running of events, but the move is unlikely to be popular on well-supported rounds, such as the Network Q Rally of Great Britain, where they attract 160-car fields and rely to some extent on the entry fees received to make the event a going concern. So I'd say that will be something to look forward to. As well, they say that any new manufacturer must join the championship with 2 cars, and they must, after they've entered the championship, so if they start mid-season, they must compete in every round thereafter, so they can't sort of attend a round, miss a round. So it means that they will keep that in place. All those changes for the World Rally Championship coming into play for 2002. We go now to Jim Murphy and the Honda Champ Car Update.
Max Pappas came into the weekend at Portland in the midst of a year-and-a-half long slump. However, something clicked right with the team during Saturday morning practice, and it was maximum Pappas from that point on.
Starting from the pole, Max collected max points as he took the win in the Freightliner G.I. Joe's 200 at Portland. After qualifying at the back of the field a week ago in Detroit, Pappas turned the tables with a spectacular qualifying effort on Saturday to take the pole position.
And today for me was a great proof. You know, the goal was being the fastest of my group and finishing the top 10. But today was a great proof that, you know, with the ability that everyone has in the Miller team, we were the first on the track and off the track, because to come out of the difficulty we had since the beginning of the year and put the car on pole position and come out with a lot of strength like we did, it takes people that have a lot of belief in ourselves.
Despite clear and sunny conditions all weekend long, race day dawned rainy and wet. Gilles Deferrin spun on the pace lap, setting the tone for a day that would see the race run nearly 16 laps and almost 40 minutes in duration before a green flag lap was completed. However, at the end, it was Max Pappas driving flawlessly to put his Miller-like team in victory lane.
Now I'm very glad I can show my emotion. You know, yesterday was just a little bit of the job done, and I didn't want to, you know, we've gone through a lot of disappointments in the past of my career in the last year and a half, and I didn't feel that I wanted to joy as hard as I had in my heart. But today, you know, I am the happiest person here. You know, we drove a fantastic race. You know, the Miller team have done a fantastic strategy. We had to race on a fuel race. At the same time, you know, I had, you know, two Neapolitan Mastiffs behind me, like Roberto and Christian. They put a lot of pressure on me. I didn't do any mistake. The Ford engine was fantastic today. It proved again that, you know, we have a great edge there. You know, we are a very strong, powered with a Lola car. And besides that, you know, we just kicked their ass.
Roberto Moreno notched his second podium in as many weeks with an unblemished drive to finish second.
It was not a fuel race, but it was a different condition which paid off for the Vistion team. If you see, we were able to do a quick pit stop because it was saving fuel also in these wet conditions, and had plenty of fuel to finish the race, whatever happened there, and we were quite happy. Toyota's did a very, very smooth mapping for us to come out of the corners, not spinning wheels, and I was trying to catch Max, but we didn't have enough for Max. He did a great race and tried to put him into a mistake situation. He didn't do it. So fantastic. Well done.
Christian Fittipaldi finished third after charging up through the top 10 in the closing laps of the race.
In the beginning of the race, a lot of guys went out on brand new wets, and those brand new wets are really slippery out there. So I guess it took a couple of laps for us to get the hang of things, and then after about 15, 20 laps into the race, you could see that left guys were really spinning out there. I myself even had a small off, and I missed the track by a couple of centimeters. Like, I just stepped with the front wheel on the grass, and basically that was it. And it really cost me a lot, but I'm very happy. I'm more happy for the points.
Here's how they finished at Portland for the Freightliner G.I. Joe's 200. It was Max Pappas and Roberto Moreno, Christian Fittipaldi, Max Wilson with an impressive drive, and Patrick Carpentier to finish fifth. Dario Franchitti, Scott Dixon, Michael Andretti, Oriol Servia, and Cristiano D'Amato round out the top 10. 11 through 15, Kenny Breck, Alex Tagliani, Gilles Deferrin, Brian Herta, and Michelle Jourdain Jr. 16th through 20th, Jimmy Vassar, Elio Castroneves, Toro Takagi, Adrian Fernandez, and Maurizio Guzman. Rounding out the 26-car field, Paul Tracy, Shinji Nakano, Bruno Junqueira, Tony Kanaan, Memo Gidley, and Alex Zanardi. The time of the race, 2 hours, 0 minutes, 20.836 seconds, for an average speed of 74.606 miles an hour. The margin of victory, under very wet conditions, 1.472 seconds. Next up for the FedEx Championship Series, we head to the shores of Lake Erie and Burke Lake for an airport for the Grand Prix of Cleveland. Each week, the Honda Champ Car Update brings you the latest news from the world of karts, straight from the track and directly from the driver's mouth. This internet experience is brought to you by the folks at Honda. Racing is part of who Honda is, and you can see that by visiting www.hondaracing.com.
Yeah, Jim Murphy there with the Honda Champ Car update. And it's actually quite interesting to notice that Honda are putting quite a lot into their support of motorsport and capitalising a fair bit on it as well in terms of their advertising, both from their activities within the Honda Champ Car Championship and also lately in their Formula One endeavours, using their Formula One endeavours to help promote their road cars quite heavily. So interesting to see what's going on there. But, of course, next weekend we'll have the results from the Formula 1 Grand Prix at Magny-Cours in France. No doubt we'll see which of the shoes comes out on top. And it'll be the Konica V8 round up at Lakeside as well.
Of course, featuring the Procar series once again.
That's right. So the Procar boys will be up and at them. The interesting part is, too, they're talking about the Procar meaning they're going to have an Ipswich in a few weeks' time, where the V8 Brutes will be back again. And again, they're having another of the Ute musters, and they're anticipating something like possibly 1,000 Utes turning up to attend that meeting.
Yeah, it is going to be an interesting event all round that Procar will be putting on. Of course, building up to the Sandown 500 for Nations Cup cars, and a full support category over the weekend from the Brutes, plus AA and B, which is GT Performance, and also C, D and E, which is GT Production. Now, the talk that I'm getting from the Procar people is that Class B, which we saw here at the GMC 400, will be moving into a production category, thereby leaving the grid of A cars as a standalone event. That is interesting because they're just getting so many A class cars at each event that they're now starting to run into a problem with. They've got enough for 1.5 grids. And that means, obviously, the slowest B cars aren't getting a good run on the weekend, which will mean a slight change in the way they're having to organise their events. But, obviously, as each of the classes get enough cars to have standalone races, that is what they'll be eventually breaking them off to do.
And that's good to see for Procar, because that championship going ahead in leaps and bounds.
It is indeed one championship that this weekend is on its rest. And rest weekend, it's the last rest weekend for NASCAR series this year, and after last weekend they probably need it. They travelled to Sonoma in California, where Tony Stewart took a very hard fought win. It was probably as remarkable a win as it was for Robbie Gordon, who was a super sub for this road race, leading the event and was dominating the event. In fact, towards the end of the race, he was bumped off the track by Kevin Harvick, who was a lap down, with about 5 laps left to run in the race, and that put that allowed Tony Stewart to come through and take the win. Now, Tony Stewart, of course, not known for being a road racer, he, of course, grew up in the sprint car series, speed cars and sprint cars in the United States Midwest. So for Tony Stewart to come up and take a road racing event, it was a bit of a surprise to everyone. But more surprising was Kevin Harvick, the man who's filling in for Dale Earnhardt after his death. Kevin Harvick has come into the championship, and really everyone was quite surprised with the way he showed some ill discipline in the number 29 Goodwrench car. Finally, at the halfway point of the season, people start to ask, and I know Peter Norton would have loved to be here tonight to give us his half-season report, but as they go to Daytona for the July 4 Pepsi 400 next week, it is going to be interesting to see how the second half of the season will pan out. The team at the moment that is red hot is the Robert Yates Racing team, which has got a fantastic wealth of experience, with Ricky Rudd picking up a win already this year, Dale Jarrett driving hurt but still in the championship hunt. Jeff Gordon has come to come to terms with not having a Ray Everingham crew chief. It seems like they're starting to get their act together, and he is leading the points chase at the halfway mark. So as we look towards the Pepsi 400 next weekend on the show, we will start to focus in on the run to the chequered flag. But one of the funniest lines I heard all week, not only AJ Foyt's lines, but it was Robbie Gordon doing an interview on PRN's Fast Talk with Benny Parsons. Robbie Gordon said, "I can't remember the last time we saw a leader in NASCAR being knocked off by a man who was a lap down." Benny Parsons returned and said, "Yeah, I can. Last Sunday at Sonoma." Of course, that's when Harvick put Robbie Gordon out of the race. In fact, next weekend, as Colin Ford has already mentioned, we will have Lakeside, we will have the wrap-up from this weekend's Formula One Grand Prix, and looking at the NASCAR season with Peter Norton. I hope you can join us then. Colin, thanks for being with us once again this week on Inside Motorsport.
No worries, and of course, as well, we'll be probably next week also doing a bit of a preview, because we've then got the following weekend after that, the Shell V8 Championship round at Calder and the British Formula One Grand Prix. So we'll be sort of looking back at what's happened this weekend and looking forward to what's happening the following weekend. So join us again for Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.